If you ask anyone to name a female scientist, a famous female scientist, past or present. Okay, just said, who would that be? What's in your mind? Yep. Right. Marie Curie, right? Marie Curie comes to mind every time I ask somebody on the street. We ask people, you know, name a female scientist. Madame Curie. Well, it's because she shared the 1903 Nobel Prize in Physics with her husband Pierre and Antoine Henri Becquerel for her studies of radioactivity. She was the first woman to win the prize. But as a sign of the times, her name wasn't on the original nomination. The committee, which even included her mentor at the Sorbonne, credited her two female colleagues for the work that she did. And today, a century later, Marie Curie is recognized for her work and is considered one of the greatest scientists of all times. She was the first woman to earn a physics degree from the Sorbonne, the first to teach there, and by the end of her career, she was awarded not one, but two Nobel Prizes for her research, which is still quite a rare event even today, doesn't matter what sex you are. Scientists don't normally lead very public lives, and many times, you know what we know about them, we learn from newspaper articles written at the time, something like snippets of gossip for public consumption like Einstein and his socks or something like that. Well, author Barbara Goldsmith has written a new book about Marie Curie that gets behind her public facade. It's the story of a single-minded scientist obsessed with her work, struggling through bouts of depression, at times neglecting her children. My guest today tells this story of Marie Curie, revealed in her diaries, her lab notebooks, her letters, and family members. In this hour, we're going to talk about the woman behind some of the great scientific achievements of modern times. And if you'd like to talk with Barbara Goldsmith, our number 1-800-989-8255. Let me formally introduce her. She is a writer and historian in New York. As I say, the author of Obsessive Genius, The Inner World of Marie Curie, published out now, 2004. If you can find a book, they're flying off the shelves, she tells us. Barbara, welcome to Science Friday. Book selling that well, huh?
It's selling very well, mostly by word of mouth, because I think up till now, Marie Curie has been depicted as this remote icon. You know, streets are named after her. The 500 franc note was named after her. She's buried in the Pantheon. But I think that I had access to diaries, workbooks that had been sealed for 60 years. So nobody kind of knew what she was really like or what she was really thinking. And then, of course, there was a second reason, which was a lot of these papers were radioactive. And until 3 years ago, if you wanted to look at any Curie paper, you had to sign a medical release.
Did you have to do that?
No. They discontinued that 3 years ago because her granddaughter, who is also a wonderful physicist, get those genes, boy, she took them to Orsay and had them decontaminated.
Wow. Real designer genes. Tell us how you got access to the papers then, if they were sealed up for 60 years.
Well, you know, Jim Atlas, who runs Atlas Books, asked me if I wanted to write a book on Marie Curie.
Yeah.
So I went home and I put her name in my computer, and in 10 seconds, 1,000 references came up. And I called him up and said, I don't want to write a book on somebody that everybody else is writing a book on. A week later, it was like some great luck. My friend Robert Darton, who's a professor at Princeton, called me and said, did you know that the Curie archives have been released and they're in the public domain? And I said, no. He said, well, I think maybe you can get in. And, of course, I couldn't have gotten in if I were writing my first book.
Right.
But I have a certain reputation as a scholar and for doing good research. And so there were a lot of handwritten letters from people like Bob and Paul LeClaire, who's the head of New York Public Library, and I've worked at the library. I'm a trustee there. And finally, I got to that room.
And what room is it?
It's a room in the Bibliothèque Nationale called the Curie Archives, and it's on the Rue Richelieu, not the new big one.
Yeah.
And the curator said to me, you can't see these papers. I said, but they're in the public domain, and I was allowed access to this room. She said, well, yes, but you have to have a letter from a direct Curie relative that you can read them. They are in the public domain, catch 22. To cut a long story short, I interviewed Marie Curie's granddaughter, and at the end I said, would you write me a note saying that I can read these papers? And she said, absolutely not. They're in the public domain. So I thought
catch
for a minute,
right?
And I said, well then, would you write me a note saying that I don't need a note? And she called them up and got me in, and it was such a treasure trove. I mean, suddenly, all my writing concerns the difference between image and reality, and suddenly, I was confronted with a woman who was so different from anything I'd ever thought of, and a woman who could have lived today. She was coping with being a single mother, with not having enough money, with just loving her job and what was going to give. What gave was her attention to her children. She had her father-in-law there helping, but then he died. I mean, it could have happened any minute, except that Marie Curie happened to be an obsessive genius.
So all that was locked up in the tray. You found she'd, so your whole image of her just changed from what you found.
Totally.
The mythology was that she was what?
That she was perfect.
Yeah.
And that she had it all. She had a wonderful love affair with her husband. She had two wonderful children, one of which was another genius who won a Nobel Prize in 1934. That her life was just glorious.
Yeah.
Well, her wife was glorious, but it was also very tragic, really tragic.
And no one knew that in those days about her, or they kept it secret, do you think?
Well, they kept it secret, which is very interesting to me, because she had had, after her husband's death, a very passionate affair with a scientist named Paul Langevin. And it was the scandal of Europe. And when she was coming to America, the person who brought her, Missy Maloney, said to every member of the press, if you want to interview Marie Curie, if you want to have any access to her, you cannot write about this affair. So nobody in America knew about this. And they just thought of her as kind of like, maybe the way they think about, wrongly, Susan B. Anthony, as a frozen kind of sexless woman.
And that wasn't even her real name, Curie, was it?
No. I didn't even know that she was Polish. She was born Mania Sladowska in Poland. And, of course, I think the key to her was her childhood, in that she was born in Warsaw, but at that time Poland did not exist. After 1915 and Napoleon's defeat, the Russians took over.
Right.
Warsaw, and she had to speak Russian, she had to read Russian, Polish was forbidden, and her father, who was a physics professor, was fired because he tried to keep Polish pride going. And he had this glass case, it's in Obsessive Genius, The Inner World of Marie Curie, he had this glass case, and all his apparatus was locked in there. And as a child, she was transfixed by the fact that this apparatus existed, and also by the fact that her father couldn't ever use it again.
Well, I'm talking with Barbara Goldsmith, author of Obsessive Genius, The Inner World of Marie Curie. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Yeah, no one would ever think the name Marie Curie was Polish. You know, she's really started out. How did you get from Poland to Paris?
Well, she got from Poland to Paris, so I just followed her.
Well, I mean, how did she get? How did she get there?
It's an amazing story. She was poor because of her father's being dismissed and having to take very menial jobs. And her mother died of tuberculosis. Her sister died of typhus. And her other sister, her older sister, Bronya, wanted desperately to be a doctor. So to cut a long story short, and it's longer in mm-hmm. my book, she worked as a governess for 8 years to send money to her sister so she could go to the Sorbonne and become a doctor. And when her sister became a doctor, she sent money to Magna Marie and brought her to Paris so she could attend the Sorbonne.
What a story. 1-800-989-8255. She is best known for her discovery of radium, but that wasn't, according to your book, that was not her greatest contribution to science.
Not at all. Everybody says, Marie Curie, bing, bing, radium.
Right.
And, of course, radium was an element. She was a genius to find this element, but it was a mixed bag. It cured cancers, but overexposure killed. It killed more people probably than it cured. And it was only used for 20 years when it was replaced by cobalt in cancer mm-hmm. cures. Radioactivity, what Marie called the science of the unseen, and these waves that were coming out of the atom. She was the first one who said, this is an atomic property. And people like Rutherford in England have been trying to prove that. But everybody thought of the atom, as Rutherford said, as a little lead ball. Lisa Meitner said it was made up of solid bits and pieces and could never be penetrated. She suddenly made them think, wait a minute, there's something in there. And she ushered in all of 20th century science.
Mm-hmm. And it was her, it was the cause of her death eventually, right? The radiation that
yes.
she and her husband
yes.
were exposed
Not
to.
Only she and her husband, but her daughter and her daughter's husband, who was also a brilliant scientist, Federico Joliot Curie. And
they had no idea that it was dangerous when they were discovering it.
She had no idea that it was dangerous, but how she had no idea that it was dangerous is one of the mysteries I have not been totally able to solve in Obsessive Genius, because there was so much evidence that, and by the time her son-in-law and her daughter were working with these substances, well, take, for example, there were 35 girls in New Jersey who painted radium dials on watches so that they would shine in the dark, and they would lick the brushes to bring them to a perfect point, and every one of the 35 died of throat cancer. So there was ample
evidence.
Maybe
she ignored it? She knew that she ignored it?
She ignored it, or she denied it, or radium was her child. Mm-hmm. She slept every night with a vial of radium salts next to her bed, looking at that beautiful blue glow.
Knowing she was exposed to it as she slept with it.
Yes. And by the time she died, she'd had cataracts, kidney removed, but she wouldn't let it come into her consciousness.
Wow. We're going to talk more with Barbara Goldsmith, a writer and historian, author of Obsessive Genius, The Inner World of Marie Curie, published this year from W.W. Norton, Atlas Books. Stocking up, hopefully, at your bookstore. It might be a great Christmas holiday gift for you. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Barbara Goldsmith. Don't go away. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about the life and science of Marie Curie with Barbara Goldsmith, a writer, historian in New York, author of Obsessive Genius, The Inner World of Marie Curie. You say you still, it took you years to write this, but you're still so enthusiastic about this topic.
I love research. I love opening a new window and then seeing what's there. And with this book, it was just as if I'd fallen into the honeypot, you know. Everything was so rich and so different from what I had thought it would be. And also, I love to write nonfiction that reads like a fast page-turning novel,
right.
And I love to make things clear. So in this case, I had to learn the science. It took me 3 years to learn the science. And I think that was good, because if it was clear to me, it was clear to the reader. So there's no jargon in here. You know what everything is. And I'm also glad that Marie died when she did, because after that, science has gotten too complicated for
me
to know.
Well, how was science done in her day that is different than is done today?
That was the day of the great virtuoso scientist. And when you think, in a book I try to capture the whole world of a person, the inner world, the outer world, every world. Well, when you think of what their equipment was, Ernest Rutherford, this great English scientist, his first radio receiver was a spool with straight pins stuck in it. Marie Curie's electrometer was designed by her husband, Pierre. And it was so complicated because it was designed with nothing but a plywood box, some wire. If you looked at it today, it would look like a classic Rube Goldberg cartoon of, you push this lever, the ball rolls here, the light goes there, the needle moves here. And I asked her granddaughter, they have one at the Curie Institute, to demonstrate it to me, and she started to laugh. She said, nobody has the agility or the patience to work this machine. We couldn't possibly show you how it works.
Did her personal life, did her life with her daughters and her family life suffer because of her work? Or
yes.
Yeah.
She didn't seem to have any idea of what young women would want. I mean, she criticized one daughter for wearing too much makeup. She thought the fact that she was a concert pianist was that she was creating noise. She said,
no
I can't
kidding.
Live with this noise.
Really?
And she, as you will read in Obsessive Genius, she would do all this work until she was so exhausted, and then she'd have these nervous collapses. And there were periods where she wouldn't see her children for a year at a time. She'd lock herself in a room.
Even when they were young children?
Oh, yes, especially.
No kidding.
She would not let their father's name be mentioned in the house after he died.
Yet she had this affair with someone else.
Yes, she did, but she was so, even when she had the affair, let me put it this way, her downfall and why there was all this scandalous publicity was that she wrote him all these letters on how to get rid of his wife. And, you know, she said, don't have sex with her, don't let her crying get to you. And people were so scandalized when they read these letters, which the wife had stolen from his apartment and released to the press, that they stoned her house.
Wow.
They tried to send her back to Poland.
So if you were to meet her when she was around, you'd think she was a terrible person.
No, I wouldn't get to meet her because she had very little social life.
Yeah.
She wrote people who she had even been close to when she was young saying, I have no time to see you. There's only my work.
Wow.
But she wanted to make sure her daughters got what she thought was right for them. Exercise, which was very unusual in those days. Mm-hmm. A fantastic education. And enough money not to have lived in the terrible poverty that she lived in, where a scuttle of coal was a major decision.
Talking with Barbara Goldsmith, author of Obsessive Genius, The Inner World of Marie Curie. Let's see if we can go to the phone, get a call or two. Let's go to Waikiki. Dal in Waikiki, hi. Are you there? Dal, go ahead.
Oh.
Are you on? Go ahead, you're on.
Program in Washington. I had called.
I guess he's listening to another show. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to Christine in Utica. Hi, Christine.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm very excited. I can't wait to rush out and buy this book. When I was in the fifth grade, my entire school had to read a biography of Marie Curie. And we did think of her as a tragic character because we learned, number one, that she was never allowed to kiss her mother because her mother had tuberculosis. I'd like to know if that was true, which kind of explains her distancing from her own children. And number two, that after her husband died, she kept the brain in a jar. So it's nice to hear all these other things about her because those are my vivid, vivid memories of that, reading that book when I was in the fourth grade.
Barbara?
She was, I think, a heroine to many of us. I had her picture up on my bulletin board, and it is true, perfectly true, that her mother had tuberculosis. Her mother used her own utensils to eat, and Marie wrote in a very short autobiography, "I never felt a mother's kiss or caress."
Oh.
And it is so sad. And, you know, I always, when I got to that, reading that letter, I thought of this great Philip Larkin poem that ends, "Man hands on misery to man, it deepens like a coastal shelf," because she had no real feelings for her children. Those patterns repeat themselves. As for keeping his brain in a jar, I don't think so.
Urban myth.
Their ashes of both of them are in the Pantheon, and she is the only woman interred in the Pantheon to this day for her own accomplishments.
All right, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you very much. It'll be our next book group book.
Oh, wonderful.
Goodbye.
1-800-989-8255 is the number. Let's go to Ann Arbor, Michigan. Is it Jersey?
Yes.
Hi, go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for taking my call. It's a very interesting show.
Thank you.
My comment is this. Wouldn't it be more appropriate to use her full name, Madame Curie Skłodowska? During her lifetime, she used both her maiden name and husband's name. For example, on her Nobel Award diploma, there is Curie Skłodowska or Skłodowska Curie. I don't remember exactly. Also, on her tombstone in Paris, there are also both components of the name.
Jersey, let me get a comment. We're running out of time. I want to get a comment.
Just for historical accuracy,
yeah,
I think it would be appropriate to use both names.
She was extraordinarily proud of her Polish heritage. And not only did she like the name Skłodowska, but she set up a clinic in Warsaw, and she raised what would be the equivalent of $1 million for it, and it was called the Marie Curie Skłodowska Curie Clinic. However, in Paris, the Curie and Pasteur clinics, the Curie Institute, do not have her Polish designation, but everything outside of those narrow things have the Polish designation, and she was a great Polish patriot and, for example, taught Polish children during the Russian occupation how to read and write in Polish, and she could have been exiled to Siberia for that.
So we perpetuate this fiction, then, by not using her last name. We should be using, if we call her correctly, we should be using her last name.
We shouldn't be calling her Madame Curie. We should be calling her Dr. Curie. She was, as she had the same degrees as any of the other men who won the Nobel Prize, but they were referred to as Dr. Henri Becquerel, Dr. Pierre Curie, and Madame Curie.
Tell us about how she, that snafu wasn't a snafu, it was done on purpose, not putting her name on the Nobel.
Yes.
Beginning. How did she get around that?
She would never have gotten the Nobel Prize in 1903 were it not for two men. First, her husband, Pierre, who said, "You can't give me the Nobel Prize. She did the work. I was her assistant." And secondly, for a wonderful Swedish chemist named Gunther Mifflin-Leffler, who said, "This is unfair. I've read the documentation," and he had nominated her for the first Nobel Prize. So when they came back and they said, "There's no time left," you have to give it to Pierre Curie and not Marie Curie. He said, oh, no, no, she's already been nominated, so we can include her. And they were forced to include her.
Interesting. Now, she became a spiritualist, did she not, after his death, and believed that she might be able to contact him in the afterlife?
Yes, people think that's very peculiar. But when I wrote my last book, Other Powers, The Age of Suffrage, Spiritualism, and the Scandalous Victoria Woodhull, I realized that this was an age where electricity had just started, Morse code had just started, all this looking into sonar, all colorific rays, radiation rays. And what was so peculiar about thinking that there could be a spiritual telegraph? Before Pierre's death, William Crookes, who invented the great Crookes tube, and many, many scientists believed that communicating with those who had passed over would prove scientifically feasible. They believed that.
Mm-hmm. Did she make many trips to the United States?
No. She made two. Mm-hmm. The first one she made in order to raise money for her institute so that her daughter, Irene, could continue researching radioactivity. But when she got here, she understood that people couldn't understand this, and so she talked about radium, radium, radium.
And that's where it got.
That's where it started.
Yes. Simple, easy. Hang
Very.
A hook on it.
Right.
The press is being the way it is.
Right.
You could easily just hang that hook
the
on
The headline in the New York Sun, which has nothing to do with the present New York
right.
Sun, was Curie Cures Cancer.
Because they were using radium.
Radium.
As you say, it wasn't very good.
Right.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to Lisa in Tulsa, Wisconsin. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I'll be real quick because I'm on a cell phone and I'm not sure it'll last. But the way you describe her, was she bipolar? Because the episodes of the disconstant and the collapses, that very much describes manic depressive.
Thanks for calling.
You're just right on. I consulted many really well-known psychiatrists, and they said absolutely they would call this a manic depressive state.
Wow. We're talking with Barbara Goldsmith, author of Obsessive Genius, The Inner World of Marie Curie, on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. When you got out of that little room, I don't know how little it was in Paris, did you take it all with you? Is there anything left?
I either Xeroxed it, took notes. My hand was pretty much falling off.
But this is kind of it's a nice size book. It's not a big book. It's an easily read book. But do you think it got all the essence of Marie Curie in here?
Oh, no.
No.
I don't think you could. I don't think anyone could get everything. And I didn't try to get everything. I tried to get exactly what she did scientifically so that people would understand it and what her nature was. But I could tell you 100 stories about her that are not in this book. I always think you can find a million details, but the detail that tells you something is really rare. And that's the kind of thing that I love to find.
Give us one example.
An example of that would be after she and her husband discovered the element radium, they were the celebrities of the town, and he bought her a beautiful necklace to go to the opera. And when she put it on, he said to her, "You know, you're a really beautiful woman, but we have no time for that."
That was just trivial.
Yes.
That was just too materialistic.
Right. And
if she were around today, what do you think she would be involved in?
Definitely in science.
Yeah.
She was a genius, but science today is so different in that her granddaughter, for example, is involved in atomic science. And when she writes a paper, there are at least 20 names on it from all over the world. When Madame Curie wrote a paper, there was the name, her name, period, especially after Pierre died. They wrote their papers together before that. And had he not died in this horrendous accident...
He was run over by a cart, right? A horse-drawn cart.
Well, it was more complicated than that, in that his legs had been so weakened by exposure to radium, and it was a very rainy day, and he slipped. The front wheels of the cart missed him, but the back wheel rolled over his head. So, and he died instantly. Mm-hmm. And from that minute on, she became a person who I think could only relate to her work. And when you think about how long she spent, 4 years to produce something that would be a few grains of sand, 10 tons of water, 10 tons of ore residue, 4 years in front of an electrometer. And then, later in life, when she was challenged, she produced radium as a pure metal, and that took her 3 years.
So she just became obsessive at that point?
Yes.
After her husband died?
Yes.
Changed woman?
She was. In Obsessive Genius, I use a quote from her daughter's very good biography, which was written right before they sealed the papers so that nobody could see them. It was written in 1937, and she says that that point was the decisive point, mm-hmm. that not only was she a widow, but she was, I believe her daughter says, an incurably lonely woman.
If you want to read more about Marie Curie, pick up Barbara Goldsmith's book, Obsessive Genius, The Inner World of Marie Curie. It's out. If you can't get it, order it and back order. Thank you for taking time to talk with us today. Good luck on the book.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Stay with us. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, more Change Gears and read your letters, your cards and letters. Find out what you like, what you don't like. Stay with us. We'll be right back.